Welcome to the Flow Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:03 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 23rd, and I thought we'd kick off today looking at Venezuela because it has a major bond payment that is coming due, and these are supposed to be sinkable bonds. Usually, when you issue a sinkable bond, it means that you have to set aside some money to pay off the principal in the event that things go south, and it is looking increasingly likely that Venezuela has not set aside that money. And you can see here on the maturity that it's got two different bonds, the regs and the 144As, and those are due, the principal is due on November 2nd. Now, if we look at the yield on one of these, well, what we can see quite clearly is that it isn't, that Bloomberg isn't even graphing the yield anymore, it's graphing the spread. So what we're seeing right now is that the spread has gone out to 539 basis points, and the price is around 90. Now, a price of 90 does not represent a panicky price, but this run-up in the spread is pretty significant, and not least because these bonds are going to be maturing within 2 weeks. And it represents a potential problem, because when we look at oil prices, well, I think the most important thing that we can say is that they are not at $100. They're not even at $60, and Venezuela needs prices that are significantly elevated above where levels are right now to be able to justify how much money it has committed to the bond market, which is rather exceptional. So it's an awfully big question whether Venezuela is going to pull the plug and decide that they're going to go for a restructuring on their entire debt, or whether they're just going to play it out until they literally have no money at all left. They've only got $40 billion in foreign reserves right now, and it's significantly more than that outstanding on their debt markets. So far, they have been prioritizing the debt that they can't have a grace period on, and the grace period on these bonds is on the PDVSA bonds is coming up pretty soon, so they might yet make the payment, but that probably doesn't question the inevitability of it all, of a default. When we look at the Venezuelan stock market, then what we have here is a graphic representation of inflation. That they this the currency is going down so quickly that we are given a picture of hyperinflation in the stock market. But I think that this is an object lesson, that we tend to look at this and think, golly, this was rather exceptional. If I could have had a hedged way of investing in Brazil, then wouldn't that have been wonderful? But what it also helps to illustrate is that the stock market reflects the inflation rate and is therefore one of the best hedges against inflation. And against that background, let's not forget what happened in Japan today. So Abe came through with a withholding onto his majority, and therefore has a mandate to redeploy the funds from the sales tax hike into stimulus rather than paying down debt. And the stock market was up by about 1%, 239 points, and it is at a new recovery high. It is overbought in the very short term, and there is about just about 2,000 points of fat on that overextension before it would return to the mean. But nonetheless, it is breaking to new all-time highs, and the likelihood is that the stimulus is going to persist. And that's important, because I've often shown the fact that the ECB has been a major provider of liquidity. But when we look at the Bank of Japan, then what that is also showing us is that this is an index that has been accelerating higher, and it's unlikely to stop. So this is, I think, the this is a trend that will persist as long as Abe is in charge of the administration, and capital is both global and mobile. So despite the fact that there is speculation about what's going to happen with the Fed, this is a profound change that we've had in the monetary environment in Japan over the last few years. And the fact is that the topics has pretty much done, well, has encountered resistance in the region of 1750 on multiple occasions since 1992, and it is now approximating that region once more. There is the potential that we get some pause and consolidation in this area, but it is unlikely to derail the potential for a clear and sustained breakout, and that would complete this medium-term bear market. In fact, it was a long-term bear market. If the topics is breaking out to new highs, then we can conclude that Japan is back in a new bull market. And the second section index was up another 14 points in here today. It has paused around the 7,000 level. I anticipate that we're going to see an additional pause around this big psychological round number, considering that it paused at 5,000, paused at 6,000, and now we're at 7,000. It wouldn't be all that surprising if we saw some consolidation here, but it's unlikely to be anything more than that. And I think that that is perhaps the most important point, that this is looking like a bull market for the Japanese markets. And when we look at the yen, then it got all the way up to test those peaks from July, May, and March in here today, but it wasn't quite able to, the dollar wasn't quite able to break out. And we may get some additional pause here. But when we think about the fact that the Federal Reserve is reducing supply and the Bank of Japan is increasing supply of their currency, then that should begin to sway in favor of the US dollar over the medium term. And there is the potential that Japan is going to unleash an inflationary cycle. I think that we can't simply ignore that possibility. The 10-year JGB is at about 6 or just about 7 basis points, and that has corrected what was a negative interest rate environment or a negative yield environment for most of 2016, but nonetheless we're still pretty close to zero. It's unlikely, I think, that this is going to go back into negative territory, but the reality is that Japan is engaged in massive quantitative easing, and they are in there both buying the stock market and the bond market. So as long as that remains the case, that is likely to continue to depress yields. But all that money has to go somewhere, and the likelihood is that the stock market will continue to act as a potential hedge against inflation. And it might not just be a hedge against Japanese inflation, but it could also be a hedge against inflation elsewhere. So US Treasury yields have been ranging below 2.4% for most of the last few months, and we're a little bit weaker in here today, but this continues to look like a base formation over the last almost 6 years. And if that is indeed the case, then what we can anticipate is that we will have volatility, we will have both failed upside and downside breaks, but that eventually this range will be resolved, because it looks increasingly more like a base than a range. And if even Japan can foment inflation, and certainly the case is not yet proven, but if they can, then that means anywhere can. And if anywhere can have inflation, well, then the fact that the US has been among the countries that was both first in and now first out of its quantitative easing program, the question is, are we going to get inflation here as well? Now, when we look at stock markets, they are a bit overbought in the short term, and the potential for some pause and consolidation has increased. A point that I was making in the weekend audio is that when we look at something like the Dow Jones, that if it is going to remain consistent, then it is due a pullback, and that pullback could be in the region of 500 points and still be consistent. And generally speaking, it would be healthy for it to pause and consolidate here, because that would suggest that we're still in a consistent advance and that there is potential for additional upside. If it fails to consolidate here, then it will accelerate, and that will be a trend ending and could set us up for a much more meaningful pullback. Because if we look at where the price is right now, it's at 23,000 and almost 23,300, and the mean is at 21,600. So that is a substantial pullback, even to get back towards the mean. And it has been an awfully long time since Wall Street has had a 10% pullback. So the greater the number of small consolidations it has, the less likely that we're due a big one. And there are of course, continued political machinations going on in Europe. The FTSE 100 continues to consolidate in the region of this 7,600 level, and the pound is relatively steady, at least against the dollar, and a bit stronger against the euro. And there is continued speculation about the success they're going to have with getting a, or I guess, getting through the next 4 or 5 weeks so that a transitional agreement will become more realistic in terms of the negotiations with the Eurozone. But the Eurozone has got other things to worry about, considering that the Spanish are attempting to take back control of Catalonia, and this IBEX index has been trending lower, albeit in a moderate phase, in a moderate manner, I should say, for much of the last 6 months. It is now approximating the region of the trend mean, and this is about where support should be found, if indeed it is going to be found. But when we look at it over the last 10 years, then it represents a base formation. Gives again a great example of just how volatile these type 3 base formations can be, because it's a trough to peak swing of 100%. And we've had this pullback. It is in the region of the trend mean and had been trending higher for about a year. But we've also seen that the trend mean has been both up and down within the context of this decade-long base formation. And if it fails here, then the potential is that it will go all the way back down and test the 8,000, and in extremis, test the 6,000 level, because that is the context of a type 3 bottom. So what happens next in terms of Spain is rather important. And it is interesting that its neighbor, on the western side of the peninsula, Portugal, is also in one of these lengthy type 3 base formations, which has been prone to failed breaks on the downside, but it is firming. It has broken the medium-term decline, and it is at new recovery highs, pretty close to at least. So then when we look at which are the there are going to be a lot of headlines written about Spain, and it is going to dominate the news flow, but that doesn't mean that it is the only thing happening in Europe. And of course, because of everything that is happening, and the fact that you have a number of populist and anti-further integration governments coming through to power in Eastern Europe, not least in Austria or the Czech Republic, then that is going to at least be factored into the calculation of the ECB and what they can do with monetary policy. And the Germany is a key beneficiary of continued easy money, and they are the German industry is continuing to do well because the euro has been so weak, and it is at a new recovery high on the DAX. And if that is true for the large caps, then it is equally true for the mid caps, which have continued to outperform. And when we look at the resources sector, then what I think is interesting is that when we look at the metals index, that it remains in a recovery trajectory, although it was in negative territory in here today, and that we might see some additional consolidation. But if I take, for example, the just a major cement company, CRH, then it has bounced from the region of the trend mean, and that is a sector that should be doing well in the in a period of synchronized global economic expansion. And ArcelorMittal, which has been firming from the region of its trend mean, and it has certainly changed the downward bias that was evident all the way from the beginning of 2014. And again, this is a sector that is leveraged to global growth. And when we look at, for example, Amazon, then it was down 16 today and has again failed to sustain the move above $1,000, suggesting that it is going to come back down and test the region of the trend mean, whereas Target has at least bounced in here and is now trading back above its trend mean. So we have seen perhaps a little bit of rotation, that perhaps Amazon had a lot of good news priced in, whereas some of the retailers, but I don't think it's all the retailers, but some had perhaps too much bad news priced in. Macy's is a fraction of where it was back in 2015, but it has at least stabilized around the $20 area. But it really does have a lot of work to do, and one really has to question, does it have the wherewithal to stage a recovery against the I think the rising tide of online? And we can also see the effect that the migration to online is having on the entertainment industry. Because I think it is still arguable whether, for example, Disney is forming a top formation, or whether this is a lengthy medium-term range. But what we can say when we start to compare these types of shares is that they are no longer trending higher, because Fox, 21st Century Fox, looks like a type 2 top with right-hand extension. And that has to be, I think, at least compared to the outperformance of the gaming sector. And of course, games are, and I haven't typed that correctly. The gaming sector is probably due some consolidation, but it looks completely different to Disney or 21st Century Fox, that it has completely outpaced the growth of the movie industry, and the content producers are being cannibalized by companies like Amazon and Netflix. The footfall at theaters is declining, whereas the number of people playing games, whether on their phones or on consoles, has done nothing but increase. And again, it represents an additional change. And when we also start to look at the granularity of the of autos, that delinquencies on auto loans have begun to trend higher. And the number of new car sales has been trending lower. Some people will be concluding that that is because people can no longer afford to buy cars. And of course, the other side of it is that a significant proportion of the younger generation don't want a car, that they're more than happy to use Uber or Lyft, and that it works out cheaper on average to do that if you live in a city. Obviously, if you live in the countryside and you have to move over, fairly significant distances, then you obviously do need a car. But if you live in a city, particularly a densely populated city, then the likelihood is that the number of times you need a car is less, and that younger people are more at ease with using ride-hailing apps. So what we are getting is a transition, and that is affecting sectors in different ways. That's likely to continue. And it does mean that we're going to continue to see this polarity in stock market performance. Personally, I think that the evidence is increasing that inflation is beginning to return. And it is interesting that gold prices have been pretty steady around this $1,250 area, and we're off their lows in here today. But they still have work to do. they still need to demonstrate that this low can hold and that the downward bias since the peak back in August, I believe it was back in August at least, excuse me, it was in September, is going to get taken out. By and large, when we look at this 10-year chart, this looks like a process of right-hand extension following the Type 2 bottom in 2016. So that would suggest that it is a matter of time before we see a break above $1,400. That doesn't mean that gold is going to go up on consecutive years for the next decade, but that if I think if history holds, that we're in for a lengthy range, but that range could be 100% from trough to peak. And I think that would be my base case for gold. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.